"Let me just run this by my lawyer" is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print? Or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Had enough of those supplements that leave you feeling nothing? Symbiotica is your solution to great-tasting, all-natural supplements that actually work. Crafted with premium plant-based ingredients, their products have no seed oils, fillers, or artificial nonsense. It's just pure goodness in every pouch. Try them out and actually feel the difference today. Visit Symbiotica.com and use code IHEART for 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Again, that's 15% off plus free shipping on your subscription order. Go to Symbiotica.com. That's Symbiotica.
Hey, Ken, did you know that gold is the only currency that's held its value since the dawn of money?
Well, I did. Thanks to our friends at Legacy Precious Metals, the most trusted name in gold investing.
Investing in gold protects you against inflation and gives you a hedge against stock market volatility.
Don't leave your retirement to chance. Call Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-691-2173.
Or download your free investor's guide now at buylegacygold.com. That's buylegacygold.com.
Well, my ballot's in the mail. I just got my email this afternoon.
You're one of those.
It's in the mail.
You're one of those.
No. You're misinterpreting.
What?
It's being sent to me. I don't have it yet.
Oh.
I have not sent it in yet. Oh. Most people don't have it. They're just starting to do this. They send you that ballot tracks thing. You got that too.
I thought you mailed it in, but it's being mailed to you right now.
Yeah, I don't have it yet. Correct. Oh. But they're telling me it's in the mail to come to me very soon. If I don't get it within 7 days, it's supposed to let somebody know, blah, blah, blah. Right. In 1 hour, we got a few things to do to talk about with the gas prices. We'll also bring on the Moist Line people, and we'll also throw a hack in the dumpster. John Cobalt is leading the way today. This is very personal to him. Okay.
Yeah.
So that'll come up.
We'll tell you about it. We're going to talk now with Sam Quiñones. He wrote a piece for Los Angeles Magazine. It is comprehensive about why we have so much homelessness in Los Angeles, not only the history of it, how we got here, but how deep and widespread the problem is, and why it is extremely depressing and dispiriting. There are parts of it that it's hard to believe that all this has actually happened.
Yeah, he makes the case that LA's homelessness crisis response is actually spread across the country. You see the same response adapted in many other parts of Southern California and even in other states, and it is a horrible response. He spent a lot of time talking to a woman by the name of Estella Lopez, who works for what they call a business improvement district, which encompasses Skid Row. And that's got to be quite the job. But I'll read you one paragraph before we talk to Sam. In Lopez's view, what created today's Skid Row includes municipal abandonment combined with methamphetamine, the abdication of drug addiction and mental illness treatment, misguided charity, and the city settlement of court cases that in practice now limit enforcement of laws governing drug sales, street habitation, pimping, and assaults. In recent years, Skid Row homelessness marked by meth abuse and tents has spread across Southern California and many parts of the U.S. By 2018, tent cities emerged in Mid-Wilshire, Santa Monica, Highland Park, South Central, and along freeways. A strip of tents on Venice Beach has actually become known to locals as, I've never heard this one, John, Methlehem.
Bethlehem. That's
yeah,
cute.
Instead of Bethlehem, it's Methlehem.
All right, let's get Sam Quiñones on. Sam, welcome. How are you?
Very well. Thank you for having me on your show.
This is an astonishing article that you wrote here.
Great.
I can't imagine how much work you put into this, how much you've seen with your own eyes. There's so many different things we want to ask you.
Sure.
Why is it, you've made it clear that a huge component of this is the meth and the mental illness. Why is everyone so resistant to addressing it? Why are they so afraid of the blowback from these homeless advocates who only want housing? Why are they so afraid of them? Go ahead.
Well, I think it's in part because a lot of folks are afraid of stigmatizing the homeless as drug abusers and so on, meaning that if people come to view them as that, they may then shy away from various attempts to and approaches, strategies to help them. My feeling is that that we need to address the problem as it really is. The housing costs are certainly part of why people end up homeless and why people have difficulty coming out of homelessness. But there's many, many others, and certainly drug addiction is a big one. And certainly this methamphetamine that's coming out of Mexico in the last 10 years, that my book, The Least of Us, which is the book that really broke this story, talks about how the way they're making meth down there in the last 10 years really has created a methamphetamine that is very quickly creates symptoms of schizophrenia, paranoia, delusions, this kind of thing, and very quickly leads to kind of inability to guide one's life, and very quickly then very often leads to homelessness, even though when it doesn't lead to homelessness, if you end up homeless for another reason, say an operation you can't afford, say aging out of foster care, many domestic violence, all that. It's so prevalent now. The quantities of meth coming out of Mexico are staggering, and that very quickly, once you're on the street, meth is almost a way of allowing you to fend for yourself on while you're on the street, and very quickly then you fall into kind of again, the meth psychosis that makes it very difficult to get out of homelessness. But the reason people, I believe, are reluctant to talk about this issue is because they feel that if you talk about drug addiction and mental illness as a part of the reasons for and the reasons why people are homeless and stay homeless, that you will be stigmatizing them and that people will be less willing to help them, this kind of thing. I think that's probably not true, but certainly, even if it is, it we need to address this as it really is, but, and not as we kind of wish it were.
That just doesn't seem rational to me. They're out there; their brains are fried by this meth. It is producing schizophrenic-like symptoms. It's clear that's what's occurring. Everybody sees it almost every day. You have to treat this horrible condition.
This is where you need sort of conservatorship. You need to be able to take these people in for treatment because clearly they don't have the wherewithal to seek it. They're just so strung out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's some of the synthetic drugs that are coming out of Mexico, as the saying on the street goes, they change everything. And one of the things they do change is whether or not people are actually able to make rational decisions in a tent encampment where they're living where they're maybe freezing to death. Certainly in some parts of the country, this is very common, losing digits to frostbite, where they're being pimped out, beaten, living without sanitation, et cetera, et cetera. And you find people still saying, no, I don't want to leave, or no, I'm fine here. And a lot of this has to do with the prevalence, the enormous prevalence and supply of the two synthetic drugs that really typify our synthetic drug era, which we are fully in right now, which are fentanyl and methamphetamine. And it does call into question whether people actually have the ability to make a rational decision. I was in southern Indiana recently, several months ago, and I'm talking with a woman there whose daughter literally froze to death rather than leave the tent encampment. She had a five-year-old at home. Her mother was raising the five-year-old. She would beg her daughter to come leave the cold. This was in January, and the girl wouldn't do it. And 2 weeks later, the mother got a call that she had frozen to death. This kind of thing really calls into question whether or not we need issues of commitment. You know, how can we commit people who are really not functioning for themselves, or a danger certainly to themselves and quite possibly to others at times.
Hi, can you hang on, Sam?
Sure.
Hi, this is Sam Quinones, a writer for LA Magazine, who wrote quite a story you have to read about LA Skid Row and how the way it's been addressed by LA politicians and activists has made it spread to other parts of Southern California, other parts of the country. Here's another great paragraph. The loudest narrative on homelessness comes from far-left activists, that homelessness is caused by high housing prices, and the only solution is affordable permanent housing. Until enough of that is built, people should be allowed to occupy sidewalks. Those with other ideas have been cowed into silence. I think that sums up perfectly the problem. That's what we've seen for too many years now. We'll talk more. This is at LA Magazine, lamag.com.
We're talking with Sam Quinones, a writer for Los Angeles Magazine. You go to lamag.com, and there's a long article. Fascinating.
But it's a good read. Skid Row Nation, how LA's homelessness crisis response has spread across the country.
So it's a great read. It's very detailed on how we got
here. It's
here.
One you just don't see often enough. You've talked about Michael Schellenberger. He writes from the same perspective, but it's rare that you find this. And the paragraph I just read is that the activists, they control the argument most of the time. They shout the loudest, and the politicians tend to bend their way, and their solutions are horrible. This idea of housing first, when you really, in many cases, especially with Skid Row and other parts of the city, you have a real like drug problem with meth just out of control.
Let's get Sam back on here. Following up on the paragraph Ken read, here's another line that you wrote. Activists have picketed the homes of elected officials, screaming obscenities through bullhorns, egging the houses of some. Homeless activists twice shouted down the city council over the summer as they were prohibiting tent encampments within 500 feet of schools and daycare centers. Yet they had to get police in riot helmets. These protesters were vaulting over barriers. What explains the vicious anger of these activists? I don't understand why they're this enraged and they get violent.
And I'm not sure I'm actually the guy to explain it to you, I have to tell you. I mean, in some cases, I suspect it's youth. You know, and youth is prone to rebellion and this kind of thing. But honestly, I'm trying to describe what I see. I went to the first of those council meetings, and it was remarkable. And then the second one was even more remarkable, shall we say? I think it gets beyond wanting compassion. There seems to be at times people who are kind of wanting to show how radical they are, rebellious they are. But truthfully, I think you'd have to. I haven't really interviewed any of them, and so I can't answer your question very intelligently, I'm afraid.
Well, Sam, let's talk about this part of what you wrote: permanent, supportive housing. And it's become the mantra in the last couple of years. This idea is no good anymore about shelters. The activists and a lot of the politicians don't like that. They want permanent supportive housing. Talk about what you wrote concerning, you know, what that in reality is.
Well, permanent supportive housing is the idea that you would give people housing, build people housing for people that would also include a variety of services. Job counseling, addiction treatment, variety of things like that. And the truth is, as many people I spoke to said, that's not a bad idea if it comes after a continuum of other forms of housing that lead you out of the street and are more controlled. But the problem with permanent supportive housing as it works now, it seems, is that people are taken from the street directly to this kind of housing, and this kind of housing, then they're allowed to use drugs. There's no stabilization of these folks beforehand. So there needs to be a couple of stages, maybe at three or so, but even before, in the minds of people I talk to, before you get to permanent supportive housing. You just can't put someone from a tent and put them into permanent supportive housing and expect that on the whole that will lead to a successful recovery from drug addiction or problems with mental illness. You need stages. And so they're just, but the problem is the idea is people don't like the idea of you putting people in housing that may be controlled, where their actions may be controlled.
Is there any way to get past what people like or don't like or what they believe, especially when it comes from these crazy activist groups? Because what they are promoting is unrealistic in some cases, simply doesn't work. I mean, when are we going to get past everybody's feelings and look at what's exactly happening in the world? Because unless we get
That's a great question. Again, I don't think as a reporter, I'm the guy to answer it for you. I would basically leave it at that. I'm trying to report the story as I see it, where this all leads, where it ends, how it will be resolved, that kind of thing. I'll report on it when we get there.
Yeah, I mean, you quote the city controller Ron Galperin's report that less than 1,200 units have been produced in 5 years. Estimated costs for several projects exceed $700,000 per unit. They've hardly built any transitional housing to get them detoxed.
That's the problem. A lot of minds of people, the problem is really what you just said, that there's no transitional housing. There's no taking people from the street and getting them into a more controlled environment where they are away from dope, where they are able to kind of stabilize. And then that kind of transitional housing can take several forms. And then eventually, at the end of all that, a permanent supportive housing option may be a very, very effective way. But it doesn't seem to work well if you're just taking a person right out of the tent and putting them right into a permanent supportive housing, where in fact there is no rule about whether or not they can use drugs, and so many oftentimes people end up using drugs while they're in this permanent supportive housing.
You know, it just seems like the city government is completely collapsed, that they just aren't capable of doing any of this. You can write eloquently, and you have, about the ideal, but they can't do anything that seems to be useful.
It's an interesting, I'm not sure I answer that. It's an interesting stalemate, it seems, has affected City Hall, where a lot of politicians are very afraid of the ire of activists, mainly because they're full timers. They don't stop. They're always, they don't have another job, essentially. And number two, it seems to me that on the other side, there's a lot of people who look at our tent encampments, look at what's happening in our, along the freeways or on Venice Beach or everywhere. We see it all over, and wonder how on earth this is okay. How on earth this is a proper result. This is the result that we want. And I think a lot of people are beginning to really see this is, I can be a very compassionate person, but I don't see how, in the minds of a lot of people, I don't see how what I'm seeing on the street equals compassion.
Yeah. And so, by the way, we're running out of time, Sam. You wrote another good part here, because I know this is part of your research about the drugs and particularly meth. And you talk here about how in 2013, the traffickers in Mexico mastered something called P2P, which allowed them to make far more of the drug and make it even more potent. And the price really dropped. And this had a big effect on places like Skid Row.
Yeah, P2P is an ingredient in one way of making methamphetamine. That's a fairly old method. They didn't need to use it because they had another ingredient for another method. It was far easier for a long time. But now the Mexican government put the kibosh on that ingredient. And so they switched to this method of making methamphetamine that requires this ingredient called P2P. The one benefit really to them of this is that if you have the chemicals, you can make P2P yourself. You don't need the actual chemical, and you can make it in such enormous quantities that you can then just dwarf any production that you used to make with the other methods. With the other method, you can make it with P2P. And what you're finding is the supplies out of Mexico since 2009, but really since about 2012, 2013, when there was a widespread mastery of this method, have spread in quantities that are just staggering all across the country, where Mexican methamphetamine never used to reach, say, before 2013. You're seeing it in Kentucky, you're seeing it in Vermont, you're seeing it in various places all across the country. But one of the first places it landed in a huge way was Skid Row, L.A. in about 2013. By 2015, people in the streets there, cops and so on, tell me that by 2015, it had actually replaced crack as the dominant drug on Skid Row, which crack had been in charge kind of Skid Row for 30 years at that point. And now it's really a secondary importance. Meth is the thing because the supplies out of Mexico are so just staggering. There's so much of it. And that's why on the street, very often, it is almost free. The problem is, of course, it creates these symptoms of, as I was saying, of schizophrenia. And
right.
It's doing so wherever this meth reached, as it reached across the country, whenever it reached, say, into Kentucky or into West Virginia or what have you, you found it created homelessness. And it also created this rapid onset symptoms of schizophrenia, basically meth-induced psychosis.
All right, Sam, we got to go, but we thank you so much for talking to us. LAMag.com is where you can find Sam Canona's story, Skid Row Nation, how LA's homelessness crisis response spread across the country. Thanks for talking to us.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
Now we turn to Joe Biden. Joe Biden made a speech today on the economy. We're going to play you a very short clip. See if you can figure out what's wrong.
Let me start off with two words. Made in America. Made in America.
Not a joke.
That's not hyperbole. I'm not joking about that, as you know.
You know, he said that like twice in a day. We'll give you the other quote. Not a joke. He loves to say not a joke. Did you pick out what was wrong, John?
No.
Okay, let's play it again.
Let me start off with two words.
Oh, I got it.
Made in America.
No, that'd be three.
Made in America.
I got it now.
And that's not hyperbole. I'm not joking about that, as you know.
I think that was on the teleprompter? Somebody miswrote it? Or did he just off the top of his head? Two words. Made in America.
Well,
maybe he combined made in. Made in America. Made. He also said the same thing, and this got walked back. I know you hate that phrase.
Yeah.
By the White House press secretary today, this is really making the rounds. He said that Russian President Vladimir Putin is not joking. See, there it is again. When he talks about the potential use of tactical nuclear weapons or biological or chemical weapons, because his military is, you might say, significantly underperforming. We haven't faced the prospect of Armageddon like this since Kennedy and the Cuban Missile Crisis. Clearly, this became a big story overnight. So,
well, you know what's weird? Is the Cuban Missile Crisis, which was from 1962, and that's when the Russians put missiles in Cuba, which is 90 miles from Florida, and...
Were they nuclear? I don't think they were they?
Well,
we didn't know.
I mean, the way this is written, it suggests that it was.
Yeah.
Or maybe we didn't. I'd have to look it up. But the thing is that was a really dramatic episode in American history. In fact, they made like television shows and movies out of it, and there were many documentaries because it was a test of John Kennedy when he was very young and inexperienced against Nikita Khrushchev, who was old and cold and ruthless. And everybody was scared that Kennedy wouldn't make the right decisions, wouldn't be able to stand up to Khrushchev, and he would end up destroying America. And it was a real standoff, and that was extreme tension. That really was the world on the brink of maybe ending. For him to say right now is just like the 62 crisis, it doesn't feel that way. It's not being covered that way. In fact, the first thing is, did he really mean that? And the White House officials are going, no, he didn't really mean that. No. And if he didn't mean it, because he's senile, which is what I think is happening, then you realize we got a president who's announcing Armageddon just casually, randomly, without any real provocation. It's the 62 Cuban missile crisis again.
That's why the White House spokesperson said today, we have not seen any reason to adjust our own strategic nuclear posture, nor do we have indications that Russia is preparing to imminently use nuclear weapons. Thank you very much.
That's the opposite of what the president said. Now, the press secretary is just a hired hack. So she's saying that
he created another fire, though, that they wanted to put out.
This is not a good thing to have a president announcing that we're on the verge of nuclear Armageddon.
The end of the world as we know it, yes.
Well, somebody's got to put him in a net and take him away. What if he wanders out and declares war against Russia or announces we are going to fire nuclear weapons? Maybe in the fevered remnants of his brain, he thinks we are at the verge of nuclear war. Maybe he must have believed what he said, right?
And another fire that the president's trying to put out is the border. So we have some audio from a Democratic U.S. Senator, Mark Kelly, from Arizona. Arizona, like Texas, is getting overwhelmed at the border right now with migrants. He is in a fierce reelection campaign to try to hold on to his seat in Arizona. So he's having a debate with his opponent, and this is what he said about Biden and the border.
I've been strong on border security, and I've stood up to Democrats when they're wrong on this issue.
It sounds like
including, by the way,
yes,
including the president. You know, when the president decided he was going to do something dumb on this and change the rules, you know, that would create a bigger crisis, you know, I told him he was wrong.
That's it? You just told him he was wrong?
Yeah.
You couldn't have been more forceful? You weren't on the news every day explaining what he's talking about is reversing of the Trump policies.
It's been going on for a year and a half.
This is what helped open up the border.
Except quietly in a room, you go, Mr. President, you're wrong.
Yeah.
I think his opponent...
No, because right now, Kelly Budd didn't say anything the last year, but now he's in a tough reelection fight, and Arizona is another ground zero place. He's got to say, of course, I pointed this out. It was dumb to roll back the immigration rules.
All right.
And that's what he did. That's what Biden did as soon as he came into office.
Right, and I think his opponent in that race, Blake Masters, said, well, then, you know, you must be the most ineffective senator in history.
Yeah, you didn't, that's right, you didn't affect any change. You didn't get Biden to go back to some of the policies dealing with asylum and things like that.
And believe me, if you had a number, and it wouldn't have to be that many, of Democratic senators who were going out every day and criticizing the border and demanding and taking the news media down there, if you had a significant number, this would end. But all these Democratic candidates have their nose up Biden's butt and nobody wants to offend because, you know, he's the leader of my party. He is my president. And so this is what I said this the other day, what pisses me off about all these people in public life. They know better. Mark Kelly knows this is a disaster. So do most of the other Democrats outside of the whack jobs who want this to happen, because they want to destroy America's standing in the world because we're illegitimate, right? There's a group like that. But most of them who were normal know this is terrible.
But,
you know, Eric Adams knows it's terrible in New York City. And now that the problem was dumped on him, he's starting to squawk. But if it wasn't dumped on him, he wouldn't be saying anything. We were talking in the last segment that Joe Biden is claiming we're on the verge of Armageddon. Most dangerous nuclear situation since the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. And I checked. Yes, the Russians were caught through spy photography. They were building nuclear missiles that they were going to launch out of Cuba.
Okay. Well,
they would have been able to shoot them to the East Coast because they were upset.
Florida's right there, too. Everybody was worried. Yeah.
We had nuclear missiles in Turkey and Western Europe.
I was trying to think of what the range of missiles was, you know, 60 years ago in terms of being able to shoot off from Russia to hit us. But having them in Cuba, that clearly could make it nervous because they would have the range to do that, to hit the U.S. So I wondered. But
yeah. Then Kennedy made a deal, remove the Cuban missiles, and we will not invade Cuba. Mm. And he also secretly agreed to remove missiles from Turkey.
I'm looking at side-by-side stories, Fox News, El Segundo Times. This is about the stabbing that occurred yesterday on the Las Vegas Strip, where two people were killed and six others were injured. The suspect, and it's not really a question, this is the killer, is Yanni Barrios. Now, the Times reports that he took a bus Thursday morning to the Wynn Hotel to inquire about a job. And he approached the showgirls, and he told them he was a chef, and he asked if they would take a picture with him and his knife. He thought they were laughing at him, making fun of his clothing, and then he stabbed two, and then he went on a stabbing rampage and stabbed several other people. One of the showgirls, Maris DiGiovanni, died from her injuries. He was, quote, looking to let the anger out, and he attacked several other people, and he fatally stabbed a man by the name of Brent Hallett in the back. 8 victims in total, 2 dead, 6 injured. He was arrested a short time later, and then, you know, the Time story goes on to talk about more of the details with the showgirls, and they just felt uncomfortable and backed away from him, and that's why he went nuts, because I get they're saying now he withdrew the knife. If you've seen his picture, too, he's a little shocking looking. Barrios traveled from California 2 days before the attacks, went to the Strip after he was told by a friend he couldn't stay at his house. He asked a janitor at the hotel to contact immigration authorities so he could go back to Guatemala. He also told a security guard he was trying to sell knives so he could make money to go back home. Now, Fox News has made it clear that this stabbing suspect is in the country illegally. The Times kind of danced around it.
Right. Yes.
Contact immigration authorities. I want to go back to Guatemala.
Yeah.
Nobody. He's an illegal alien, and he's probably a vagrant, too, because he got kicked out of the house he was staying in. He had nowhere to go. He ends up in Vegas. He can't get a job. The showgirls he thinks are making fun of him, so he snapped, and he started stabbing people. That's what happened.
And that's why it's so difficult. It is so difficult to do this job because you get the Los Angeles Times, and you know you're not getting the full truth, and you're not getting it presented in a clear way. The lead paragraph should be an illegal alien homeless person stabbed 2 people to death and injured 6 others. So right away, you know why this happened. It happened because we have an open border. We have it because laws aren't enforced and homeless people can wander around and do what they want. And it was a random attack. It wasn't a family member. It wasn't, you know, some other domestic situation. It wasn't a robbery. It was just a lunatic allowed to wander the streets.
Yeah.
And we have enough of our own lunatics. We don't need them coming over the border. The LA Times won't tell us that. Now, again.
Well, there's one more nugget.
Makes it
which the Times completely ignored, and Fox News doesn't have the details, but says not only was he in the country illegally, he's got a criminal record in California. Like to know what that is. I don't think they were able to obtain any details on it yet, and the Times didn't even mention that he has a criminal record in California. But he was here first, and he made his way to Vegas.
They either didn't do the work to find out, or they did the work and want to cover it up. Because, again, they don't print truth anymore. And this goes on in many stories all day long on their website, or in every print edition if you're still reading. It's all day. And it's subtle. There's some of the information there late in the story, and it's in a word salad. It's in gobbledygook. It's just enough for them to say, well, no, we addressed that issue. I believe it was implied. It's like, no.
Yeah, because he contacted a janitor and said he wants to get back to Guatemala. There you go. You see? That's his native country. That gives you the idea he might be in this country illegally. Not necessarily, but...
And, you know, you gotta decode all this. Like, when I'm looking at LA Times stories, I'm going very slowly and trying to decode it. And I'm looking. You have to read the whole story because you got to find out where the real meat of it is that they're burying, or they have like a string of wordy euphemisms to describe a certain condition or, like this immigration, this illegal alien, right? How complicated do they make it to try to figure out what's going on? Oh, we contact immigration authorities to get back to Guatemala? What are they, travel agents?
One earlier version of the story was that a security guard at one of the casinos there just told him to step in front of a train, get out of here.
It's a little unfriendly.
Send him off, too.
Yeah.
A little unfriendly, yes, but...
that wasn't Las Vegas hospitality there.
But I think if you were the showgirls, and I wondered this yesterday, I said, I wonder why they didn't want to take a picture with them. Well, if he's holding a large knife and looking wacky, yeah, you might want to step back.
Yeah. You know what? I wouldn't want a job where I have to publicly engage. with random people in Las Vegas, of all places, which attracts all kinds of miscreants.
All right, Johnny Kent Show, KFI AM 640 live everywhere in the iHeartRadio app.
Deborah Mark live in the 24-hour KFI newsroom. It's never been more important to diversify your financial portfolio.
Well, that's right. The S&P is down 20% from the last year, and this year looks even worse.
Gold and precious metals offer a hedge against inflation and stock market volatility. And Legacy Precious Metals is the company Ken and I trust.
Protect your retirement account by rolling it into a gold-backed IRA or have metals shipped directly to your door.
Call our friends at Legacy Precious Metals today at 866-691-2173.
Or visit buylegacygold.com.
Let me run this by my lawyer is a really helpful phrase to have in your back pocket. Legal Shield has been giving legal peace of mind for over 50 years. They connect you to a vetted law firm in your state for an affordable monthly fee. Want an experienced set of eyes on a contract's fine print, or you finally want to get that will done? Legal Shield has a dedicated group of lawyers who have your back, no matter what the future brings. Sign up today at LegalShield.com/iHeart. PPLSI does not provide legal representation or advice. See a plan for complete terms.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.